Tonight's forum is based on our theme, No Longer Strangers. From Ephesians 2, we heard a wonderful proclamation about that theme from D.M. Marquist at Vespers tonight, and how we can all the different ways in which we're given that gift of unconstructing the walls and reconstructing community. So it was a nice entry for tonight's forum, I thought. As we get going here, if you could think about how you, the communities you're part of, in home, in your, wherever you live, in your churches. We talked about different kinds of communities all through our sessions today. I thought especially of Lynn Massey's session about people who have cancer, which is a particular kind of community. People with AIDS is a particular kind of, people who have any kind of chronic disease that they share with others. And are don't even need to be in support groups for each other. It's just kind of like this automatic community that happens. I thought about that for myself. I happen to, this will date me, I am hereby announcing that I graduated from college in 1970, but that spring was a very turbulent year on college campuses in the United States. In my particular college, we had no classes or exams or anything for the last 3 weeks of my senior year of college, and it was quite a time. And I have found throughout my life that whenever I meet anyone else who was on any college campus in America in the spring of 1970, there's an immediate community of a sort. You were there too. Like this huge broad-based thing. So that's a couple of reflections just to start out. We're going to have three wonderful and astute and articulate panelists tonight. One, two, and three. And the moderator I'm Nancy Winter. I'm one of the teaching staff coordinators this year. This is Janet Grant. Janet serves the village as one of its directors. And her job description is community development in the village and the connection with all the people who live here for short and long terms and how she does that. Jim DeLange is the ENTJ pastor of St. Francis. Lucy's on tape now. He'll be doing most of the speaking. St. Francis Lutheran Church, and you've been hearing from their whole community this week in wonderful ways. And Jim is a very, very articulate and clear speaker about the kind of community a congregation can be. That was a serious comment. Mary Sue Dreyer has been doing sessions, is doing them on the church as a hospitality community, and she and her husband Gary, who are both here, are co-pastors of People of Hope Lutheran Church in Rochester, Minnesota. And Mary Sue has momentarily mislaid Gary and her son, so we'll let her go first, and each panelist, and she may need to sneak out and make sure that they're where they're supposed to be. And let her go first, and each panelist will just speak about 3 minutes and share some thoughts and ideas. And then a holding forum is just open conversation. And we'll end at exactly 9:30 so that whoever wants to leave can. But if you have other conversation you want to continue to have after 9:30, feel free to stay in this room. There are some people coming in here at 10 tonight, but to have more conversation with each other about what community is. And Holden tries to make sure and create a safe place for everyone to express ideas and opinions on any topic, and we always encourage lively conversation. The sense is that in the gospel we can talk about anything together and make that beneficial for everyone. So also please make sure that everyone has an opportunity to speak that wants to. That's part of my job, and I'll try to do it. So if I say, I think, let this person speak because they haven't, and please honor that. So we value every voice here. So, about 3 minutes each. Mary Sue, you want to go ahead? What is community?
I chose a text for my 3 minutes, and the text is from Emily Dickinson. Her little poem that says, "I'm nobody, who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell, they banish us, I think that's, just to begin it on a lighter note, and you two can bring us down to heavier ground. I thought that's
really a profound little statement of community. And without going on maybe for my total 3 minutes, and without exegeting it too exhaustively, some fun things I see in that little poem is identifying that in community we identify something with somebody else, both on college campuses in the 1970 or whatever. That in community, what I look for is not to just be the me that I want you to see, and not just be the me that I wish I were, but to be the me that I really am. And if that means I'm a nobody, or at least feeling that way today, that's all right. It's all about breaking down barriers. It's all about people bonded together in some mutual way. And Susan Brio, in preparation for this summer, wrote a little thing about community that I just love. And it's her phrase that we're a community in Christ is bound together for life, for the sake of life for all. And that's even in that little poem, that they banish us, you know, but together at least we can hang on to something that is less than banishment. So that's our start for this evening.
Could you say the poem again?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm nobody. Who are you? Are you nobody too? Then there's a pair of us. Don't tell, they'd banish us, you know.
Well, as an ENTJ, I'm just at a loss for words.
This is Myers-Briggs personality inventory. Is that TAF?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
right. Right. Yeah, right. Everybody, sorry about that. I'm sorry. That was a joke.
But that's okay. My life is a big secret anyway. One of the things about communities this isn't the Titanic. One of the things about community that I think is, whether you are in the suburbs or in an urban area like I am, is that when you try to create a worshiping community on Sunday morning, it's a different community every week to some extent. There's always a core of folks that are there every Sunday, but they're the minority. In our case, we have people who are there about one-third of the time, and others who are there occasionally, and then about 25% of our worshiping community on a Sunday morning is our visitors, first time there. So what we have to do in this group of 75 to 100 people on a Sunday morning is, in the first few moments of the worship service, to try to create a worshiping community so that to pull people together. And I'm not sure we're always successful at doing that. And my sense is that I look out over the congregation while the presiding minister is trying to do this and pull this together in some way. And that opening hymn is a way of unifying that community and bringing them together. Not everybody is with it. Some people are observers of the community throughout the service, and others are kind of get into it as it goes along. I think it's important, extremely important, that churches have the Eucharist, celebrate the Eucharist at every service. I know certain churches alternate them, but when we went to an every Sunday Eucharist, why, that became a real community of builder and people wanting to participate, even if they were just there for the first time. I think that makes a person no longer a stranger. The other thing is that I think communities, church communities particularly, have to send a message in all the things that they say and what they do, is that, folks, what we have in common here is that we're all human beings, period. From there on, we are on different places in our journey of faith, But what this is that this is a Christian community in which we have a Christian message. But whether you believe that or not, whether we believe what we say and what we're talking about, that's okay. You know, we're all here as human beings, but without apologizing at all for what it is that we are about as distinctively Christian people. The third thing I think that we do need to do is to recognize, or is to have opportunities for people to enter our communities of faith. I think the other thing is that we have to have places of entry for people to come into our communities at various places, not just the worship service, not just to depend on that. You have to have social events that are purely social, but where people can come in and get a look at your community and get a feel for it. You can have things that are like Bible studies or faith and life groups, as we have, where people can get a glimpse of the community, or you have a one-day retreat or something like this for women, and they have an entry point. So I've talked more than 3 minutes. Those are some of the things I think that you would ask. But one of the things I would say is that the need for community and the search for community is more intense now than it has ever been in my 35 years of ministry. I think people are lonelier today and more disconnected today from the larger society than they have ever been. In my 35 years, there's a real hunger for community and for connection, and I think the church is uniquely positioned to provide that, because you can enter into our communities no matter who you are, and on 4:30 on Friday you're not going to get a termination slip, or if you get old and you get crippled up or whatever it is that happens to you, you get to become so you can't produce anymore, you can still be in the community and you can still make a contribution.
Well, I grew up on a farm in central Wisconsin in which I can remember my parents often saying, well, they're good neighbors. And so I feel like at a foundation of who I am through 4-H and church and school activities and all those sorts of things, I got a sense of community as kind of being at the core of my life. As I grew up, I sought communities and I got real interested in them many years ago. And so here I am. Called to be the director of Holden Village, whose responsibilities hold in within it community building. And I never know what that means. People ask me to do this sort of thing occasionally, and I'm always kind of taken aback that I should know something about it. But I agree with you totally about the yearning for a community. One of the privileges I have of working here is I get to read the applications of those people who want to be part of the longer-term community. And I would guess that there's not a one that doesn't mention a need, a yearning to be in community with other people. The other side of that is that every one of them has a different definition of what that means. So being in community has to do with coming to some commonality about that definition. I think at Holden we have a mission statement that is on the wall someplace. Maybe it's in the other room. Creekside right now.
Do you want it?
No, that's fine. Is a common place to which we can all return and from which we can start.
But the living out of that in this place and in other places happens differently for all people. I've had the good opportunity for probably about the last 17, 18 years to be a part of intentional community, where I have particularly chosen to be a part of a mission and a ministry where others have chosen to be part of that as well. I've come to learn that community happen is not a happy feeling. That's not the core definition of what community is. It's not harmony necessarily. It's something we seek, many of us, especially those of us who are Lutherans from the Midwest, I think, seek that harmony. But it's not necessarily what community really is. Community happens when there is difference. Community happens when somebody's doing something you don't particularly like. Parker Palmer has a definition of community that's something like this. Community is a place where there's a person that you least would want to live with. And when they leave, someone comes to replace them. I found in this community, though, I'm called on annually to report to our board about the community in this place. And I find each year that I find different things that have happened that year that I would call community. Many times it's groups of people finding some common task that they enjoy doing together, and it feeds them as individuals, and together it's better than just one person doing it. At other times it's when we have a crisis together and we stop basically our life, except for, like tomorrow, essential responsibilities, and feed one another, nurture one another, reach out to one another, and help one another face the crisis in our own ways that we do, each individually do. So community is having some sort of common goal that you're working towards, and openness to the differences amongst us. This last past winter, our community's average age was 27. I'm 45, so that put me on the upper end of that community, which is pretty unusual for me. I suppose I better start getting more used to that. but I found that some of the things this particular group of people chose to do for fun and for edification weren't particularly the things I was interested in so much. And I had to stop and say, well, where's the community in that? Just one little example of something that I have kind of turned around on. There's a couple of guys in this community who've been around 2 or 3 years who aren't particularly verbal and who aren't particularly interested in sessions such as this. They're not here tonight. And aren't particularly liking Vespers every night, but they pretty much attend because they've made a commitment. But they'd like to play hacky sack. And there's a circle that happens out behind the hotel pretty frequently every day. And there's a real invitation into that circle. So I've learned from those guys that the hacky sack circle is about hospitality and welcoming into the circle and into the community, as well as sitting around this circle and having a conversation and differences of opinion.
What's hacky?
Hacky sack is a game lots of people play. These balls that you can, that are for sale in the bookstore. We have 5.95, 4.95, something like that. And they're filled with like little beads. They're about this big, like the size of a tennis ball. It's like a glorified beanbag. And they pop them around with their feet. You can't touch them with your hands.
I've seen them.
It's not something for somebody my age and my knees. So, okay. Those are just some thoughts. Have some more.
Thank you all. It's three. Actually different views on community to a certain degree, lots of connections. So like to hear from all of you now, what you think community is, what your experience of community is, your best ones, your worst ones, response to what Mary Sue, Jim, and Janet have said.
When I first started teaching, my mentor said, find a place where you can fly. If you can't, then you don't belong there. And that's been true in a lot of places. I can certainly fly at Holden. Leaving here is going to be very painful because I know how forgiving this community is. And I miss that. Also, I'm a straight man, and in many ways I envy the gay community where we live. They are really, for the most part, bound together in a common cause. And it's a humor, the funniest humor I've ever heard. Just a real sense of belonging. Any evening in the Castro, any time after dark, there are hundreds of people on the street. All walking together, being together. That doesn't happen in my neighborhood. In my neighborhood, you better think twice before you leave walking at 10 o'clock at night. Who also enjoys an art community and being with other artists, and I miss that too. And when I go back, this time I'm going to seek that out in whatever form it is.
Jack makes an interesting comment because the gay and lesbian community is a group of people that we use that language for. When we see them at all, you know, that community word gets attached to it when we talk about the positive parts of all that. You know, that's interesting. I'm trying to think of there are others.
And they have the African American.
That community, we use that language too, but I mean, it makes that way. But,
you know, they're hacky sack players. There are hacky sack players too.
Three important things that I picked up on what you said. One is the central purpose or common in life, forgiveness and hilarity.
Exactly.
Those are all key to this particular community that I choose to be part of.
When we left here, when my wife and I left here after being here 14 months, part of the deal we had to make with our employers was that we would make a presentation when we came back. And we did that with slides and with testimony of all kinds. And there were tears, and there was the joy of, Jack, I never see adults having fun.
Yeah.
Kids, yeah, but adults? Get on an ash can lid and slide down the hill.
Juggle,
yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, for me, community, I think of way back, well, maybe in another year, it'll be 50 years ago since I left my family and home and community that I knew went halfway around the world to the unknown, to the mission field. Well, I didn't go directly, stopped in France first, but anyway, I certainly came to realize the truth of the Jesus saying that whoever leaves family and home and friends because of me, my gospel will receive a hundredfold, received so that we had the mission family out there in Madagascar, and that was really a community. And we certainly had our ups and downs and our ins and outs, and in a mission conference time, there'd be some really hot tempers flaring and real differences of opinion, and all these differences, and yet there would be that closeness, just like in the family, and siblings fight, and yet they get over it, and so even to this day now, most of us that were together at that time are retired, but we have our gatherings of this family every other year back in Minneapolis. I just was that one in April, and that real sense of community.
You know, as I'm listening, it's maybe off the wall, but as I'm listening, I'm thinking a couple things. I'm thinking that people, maybe it's an innate sense to create that or to find that, a place where you belong, a place where you can be who you are or find other people like you. But on the other side, I think that's what a lot of gang members do. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that they create a sense of community within themselves. Sure. Maybe it's not the most positive, but that's also community.
Among the most alienated, I'm feeling the most alienated from the larger society.
Mm-hmm. But there's exactly what we, there's a commonality, there's hilarity, there's a sense of belonging and safety. So it just seems to me that we have to find ways to create that for our youth, so they don't find ways to create that for themselves in non-positive ways.
Part of that matches up with what Janet was saying earlier about having common goals. Now, it depends on the goals, doesn't it? Because you can clearly have a community that would have goals that most of us would not say were healthy. Might be healthy and safe for them, probably isn't, but not healthy and safe for certainly the rest of the neighborhood or the city or the world. And so you can, that's such a helpful point, because community, we can say, isn't this wonderful? Well, what's the result of the community?
One of the things, you know, you're talking about, one of the things with youth gangs is one of the reasons that that's destructive is you have kind of a Lord of the Flies community. There's all this collective immaturity, and one of my experiences, my initial experiences of starting a church in Southern California 35 years ago, was that everybody was very young. Everybody was just starting out and they had their first homes. I don't think there was anyone over 35, and you had all of these people together, and there was really collective immaturity on a grand scale. And there was a lot of, as a result of that, people disconnected from older generations, families, so it was, some of it was very, 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 very destructive and to people's lives. I think that that's one of the things that I see as a community breaker or an unhealthy community. Is when you have people who are all of one generation. That's why it always bothers me a little bit with retirement communities, where you have all these people, you know, and what they're essentially doing in these retirement communities, of which I'm eligible for one, is that they're playing. I mean, so much of what you see going on there is recreational. And that's the appeal of these communities. You can be busy just entertaining yourself and so on. And the whole idea of contributing to the next generation is not there. The other thing that that troubles me at the direction of our country is all of these suburban communities where houses are all priced about the same, and so that the classes are isolated, and you don't have that mix like you have in small towns and in cities where people are thrown together. I think that is extremely destructive for our national our national purpose, our national size. And that's why I think that our country is often at each other's throats. I don't think it's so much racial as it is class war. It really is. And it's exacerbated by the political divisions as well, because of the fact that you have people representatives in Congress who are representing, you know, they're not representing the spectrum of the classes.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm just struck by the discussion that perhaps one definition of community should be their relationship with other communities, because otherwise you have, you know, communities of exploiters, communities of polluters, and is it right to call them a community if their relationships with other communities is oppressive or exploitative? So maybe they aren't communities if they don't have that relationship. You know, or relationship with the, you know, with the earth, or relationship with the dominant mythology. They might have a warped mythology that defines that community. Mm-hmm. So relationship might be real crucial.
So to have such an identity that allows relationships without worrying about that changing my own identity, is that what you're suggesting? To be able to say this community can have a healthy relationship with another community without, and that those connections mean something in each person's lives, but those communities are still communities.
Yeah, you can maintain identity, but connected with that identity is the understanding that relationship is part of identity, you know, that you literally can't be a self-contained, you know, community. You know?
But there sure are trying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And you get to live as what makes the big push of like the what's called survivalist movement or very nationally or things like that. Yeah. It's quite prevalent around here. Yeah.
Lynn? Oh, I was thinking that to me it's kind of a confusing point, and somebody made a comment about defining the community, and my first thought was a chicken or an egg syndrome. Who defines the community? Do you have a group of people and look for the common thread and say, this is the community, like I'm thinking of Holden? Or do you say, this is the thread, this is who we are, now if you fit in and you feel you're part of that common thread, you can join it. So it's a chicken or an egg. In other words, who really defines or should define community or what a community is.
But don't you, I've often found where I've experienced community is, I didn't necessarily go there looking for it, I had a different purpose. I think of a dinner group I used to be with in Northfield. I was working in St. Olaf College and I was young, just out of graduate school, single, didn't eat very good. Met a few other people that felt the same way. I said, let's eat together once a week. That was one of the tightest group of people that I knew as part of that larger community there. And we had a purpose that was different than what it ended up being. Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things I think about closed communities or open communities is that an open community where people are not, you do not come in and say, well, okay, you have to dance our dance, but you know, we're willing to change by your entrance in our community. Yeah. So that communities take on organic kind of character where they are ever changing, and they are changed by those who come in and they are changed by those who leave, mm-hmm. which in essence happens. I often remember a fellow saying years and years ago, he said, I have five children. He said, I've always had five children. Well, you know, I mean, he knew he didn't, but what he's saying is that my family and our family structure, you know, is what it is because of all of these changes that each of these children brought. I mean, the children were all grown.
Yeah.
The children were all grown. But he couldn't remember when he was only a family of one child, or when he and his wife were just together. I mean, that was not part of the consciousness.
Your question raises an interesting issue to me, and that business of who defines community, because you get different definitions.
That's why I said it's confusing.
If the community itself is defining itself, or if people outside that community are defining it, you get very different definitions, and I think gay lesbian community is one very good example of how that can be divisive or productive, depending on who's doing the defining.
But those communities are defined by oppression from mm-hmm. the larger
right. mm-hmm.
from the larger society, as our African American communities. You know,
Well, and you have, of course, communities within communities, and I think what's interesting is that we often use the word community as something very positive and nurturing, but then we talk gangs, which may not be maybe nurturing only among themselves, but not to humanity. And at what point is a group of people not considered a community, even though there's a common thread?
Why would they not be considered a community?
Well, that's what I'm asking. Is it something that has to have a positive context?
Well, he added another dimension, that it can't be self-identified without connection.
Right.
Yeah. And is a community simply defined by affiliation? People say, well, say we're a community. I mean, you hear all the communities has become kind of a buzzword.
Yeah.
You know, you hear everywhere, the community of internet users, the community of wood pulp
producers. I don't think many people talk about gangs as communities. We are in this room.
They are.
Well, that is a community.
It's, I think it's defined by whether or not people experience a sense of community.
Yeah.
It's defined by whatever that experience is.
Do you think a gang member would define that as community? It'd be, I don't know.
See, well, and it relates back to what you're saying. When I think of a gang, is you say, okay, is a community somebody that, a group that's supportive of themselves and their common thread and others? And I don't think a gang is. I think a gang is supportive of itself, but not.
Well, then you have to define community.
That's what we're trying to do.
I just that we're going to be applying value judgments,
right,
to whether or not something is a community.
Yeah.
And I think
I think we do.
We do, but I mean, whether we want to value based on the individual goals or not, or do we start with a base definition, like we got to what, I mean, the gang thing came out of where we were going with the definition that, well, by that definition, the gang is also community, and we all kind of, so that, you know, how it relates, what its goals are, what, you know, so it, if you start by the basic human connections, and then go to goals, purpose, other identified, self-identified, however, and if, you know, we all agree that that's what makes the community go, then...
My question then is what...
I'm just trying to gather the thoughts here.
What role does freedom play in a healthy, a definition of healthy community? Because let's take, as outsiders, often we look at a gang and think, well, some of those kids are in there because they can't get out of it for fear of their lives. Or we look at cults and we talk about deprogramming people. Does freedom play an essential part in what we would call healthy community? The freedom to affiliate or disaffiliate, disassociate.
Good question.
I wonder. But you have your...
I was thinking about the your idea of the hunger that people have for community and the sense of isolation that many people feel, and when they come looking for community, they look for some place to that can hold that hunger and hold it in such a way that transforms it and it just doesn't leave them with. Just identifying the hunger allows them to experience it in another way and in the context of community and have it witnessed by other people from diverse backgrounds, you know, not necessarily all experiencing the same type of hunger, the same pain. You know, one of the things that I think that I've searched for the most in faith communities as a hunger for the constellation of mystery or wonder again, rather than this idea of doctrinal certainty or, you know, following the certain tenets. And I'm not as excited about all the 12-step groups and everything anymore. I think sometimes that they're kind of destructive in the way that they psychologize and have a limited appeal. They're very homogeneous often in their appeal to people in this idea of transforming. They allow them to experience the feeling of having whatever it is that they're identified with having, but it doesn't seem to get to the idea of transformative experience that the faith community has a lock on, but that hasn't provided the leadership for necessarily. So that's some ideas I've been having. When I think about gang communities, I think about that there's that hunger there for identification, for the elder to step forward in some way, and the mentor that's absent in our culture. That's with it.
I think one of the things that faith communities, Christian faith communities particularly, have a confidence in is that the transformative power of the gospel itself, that there is just something in the essence of the message of the gospel as it is spoken, lived out in worship, that has a life of its own to transform, that doesn't have anything to do with us. In other words, it's not humanly based. That the transcendent power may belong to God and not to us in 2 Corinthians. And that, I think that that's what we depend on, if you will, for the transformative power. That somehow we just put that word out there and it does it, even when we don't live it.
It feels to me like you've just invited us into one really important key, and that is, we've talked in various ways about gathering and identification and those things, but to come together and then experience the wonder and the mystery of Christ proclaimed and here and present, and what that means as a community to experience or even just hear that proclamation. In Lutheran theology anyway, we say that does something. that together we are entering into the mystery of what that does. Now to me, that's fundamentally different than the kind of mystery and wonder, let's say, that the group that put on the Reeboks and wanted to get on the Comet,
Heaven's Gate.
They thought they were entering into the wonder and the mystery, and I don't think after their passing on, anybody looked at that and said, what a community, you know. It was like a feeling of collective sorrow. So there is a fundamental difference there, and it's the difference is Christ among us, I would say, as a Christian anyway. But I think you've led us to a key, to me anyway. And Jim, you referred to it earlier when you talked about what does it mean to gather as Eucharist community. It's that same receiving mystery.
Well, let me give you an example of just one part. Now, I don't belong to a faith community now, but I have in the past, and I've attended others. And when prayers of healing are offered, often in the community, or the leadership and the community together conspire to make them a listing.
Make them a what?
A listing, a list. So and so, you know, needs this and stuff like that. Rather than reading them as the song, you know, as a song in supplication. Mm-hmm. So that there's that kind of feeling of withdrawal from the experience. The ritual containment, or I'm struggling for the world's words here. I think we're trying to create those words to. The ceremony doesn't seem to have the heat that the people need to bring their pain to the community.
Listing of names is sometimes, I've felt in prayers, that it excludes people who don't know these folks.
Right. Mm-hmm. Announcements.
They become like announcements, right. Yes.
Huh? Right. And what I think people are looking for, at least what I look for, is an experience of offering the pain. And look to the leadership to find some way to create that altar for that pain.
Our pastor here in the last couple of years has led us throughout the year into in the winter time right here around this circle and in summer or across the way, and it's very simple. It's, you know, in the darkness with candles and a few words of scripture beforehand, and we're invited to come forward and to kneel, to light a candle, to make the sign of the cross on one another. It's so community building in its simplicity. I mean, there's not much ritual around it, but there's some key factors to it. Scripture and quiet.
What would you think liturgic leadership could do to create that heat?
Well, I think this it's the key elements. I think you're right that someone's tracking the key elements and creates that and offers that. It doesn't have to be elaborate. The Eucharist the other night was an example of that. It was very, very simple, powerful.
I think
it takes time. I think you have to take time to kind of bring people into it because they're kind of disidentified from that experience. They don't. It's messy. You know, it's chaotic. It's not comfortable.
It's not clean.
It's not clean.
Not well ordered, which we like.
Right, right. But to know that there's someone in charge is going to bring it back together.
I think, as we're talking about the strength of the Eucharistic gathering around that proclamation of Word and Sacrament, the gathered mystery, I have an example from when I was a village pastor here from 1976 to 1978, and one of those winters here, as this community is, as Janet said, what defines the community is not what, that we all like each other, you know, or get along or even share necessarily the, you know, the same patterns of living together in community, because we come from those other connected places, right? And there were two men in the village, in the village who were on longer term staff, two who did not like each other at all. I don't know whatever happened, but they literally, which is very hard in the winter here, less than 100 people or right around that, living together in all this snow, and being able to, you know, you see each other all the time, every single day, and it was absolutely evident that these two people did not speak to each other. I mean, everybody knew they didn't talk to each other. And I can't remember if that was the one you guys were here or the other one. I get mixed up which one it was. But as the presider at Eucharist, I started noticing, it was in this room, that when we gathered on Sunday night and we gathered around that mystery and we did those simple things that gather us as community as God has given us, when it came time to share the peace, which if you've all been through at least one Sunday evening at Holden, takes a little while, I started noticing that these two men always went to each other and shook each other's hand and said, "The peace of the Lord be with you." It's the only time they ever talked to each other, as far as I know.
That's a start.
But they may never have talked to each other. It is, but the thing, I think my point is, it's not even a start. What it is, it's a reality. And it says something about what community is, at least as we understand it, is God-given, that far exceeds anything and also transforms that notion that when we think of it as gangs, for example, or whatever, I think. So I'd like to offer that in the conversation too, because it's a... So maybe what we're getting to is community is people bound together that are free to be together and are gifted to be together, not as they will or something.
And there's that transcendent power.
Yeah, right.
In the very broadest sense, when we teach 3 and 4 year olds at the child care center what their community is, we walk them around the block and we say, this is where people live, this is where people work, this is where people walk and come to do their shopping, this is your community. Mm-hmm. And that's the very basic term of what it is. And I think that there are communities, like you said, communities within communities, and I think that you often belong to several of them.
Yeah.
But from very basic. Yeah. And then I think you get into different realms.
Yeah, right.
You know, but I don't think that there's a positive and negative thing here. I think that there's a purpose that's served by community. And we may view it and have judgment and value on what they are, but I still think, whether we like it or not, to the gang members, that, or to the cult members, or to the people who went to the spaceship, their community was just as valid and was just as nurturing to them in some way as ours are to us.
Which comes back to that question.
Yeah.
Who are we, or who does define?
It's really weird, though, you know, because all of this is put in the context of loss. We're trying to get these connections, but, you know, for thousands and thousands and thousands of years, there would never have been a question of community because that's how people lived.
Yeah.
That was just kind of the phenomenology of the species. Mm-hmm. You lived together and you had these connections with this piece of ground that you lived on, mm-hmm. that the way people created their livings together. With mythologies and religions that they had, that they understood their world, their cosmologies and their great stories.
And their feuds.
And when all of that has been lost, and it's fairly recent actually, a lot of these things, many of us who even grew up in the 50s experienced community in real ways. And to be talking about these things now, it's really weird. It's actually really weird because the loss has been incredible.
That is the price that we have paid for individual liberty.
For
see,
individual,
the Enlightenment promised us.
Yeah.
The Enlightenment promised us a new order.
Yeah.
That we could be free to do whatever we wanted to do.
Yeah.
But they didn't replace it with anything.
Well, they kind of did. They said if you get all this stuff, and
acquire
your stuff, and surround your stuff, and get your stuff, everything will be fine.
But if you're free, and our politicians ever, the people who founded this country, Jefferson and the other, that was what they were all about. And our politicians keep, every president repeats that.
Yeah.
What's wonderful about America is freedom. Freedom to do what? Freedom mm-hmm. to be free.
Yeah.
But we've lost our sense of commonwealth.
Commonwealth is a great word, and that's, and that's what connects communities. What is the commonwealth? What is the community with a big C that all these little communities relate to? Maybe all these little communities, if there is no community with a big C, all these little communities are just little interest groups, and it doesn't really matter how you define them, because if you want to affiliate with them, you can do whatever you want to do, and that's, the American way, as you would, define it with individualism. But what about the big C? The community with a big C.
An interesting example of all this, a casual conversation yesterday, somebody from Minnesota said about Washington, here we go, this is the whole village conversation, but said, gee, all of us in the Midwest, we all of our houses and everything, there aren't any fences. And I thought, it really is true. And then out like in Seattle or Portland or wherever, everybody's got a fence. Then I started thinking about, if you go to the East Coast, everybody lives in row houses and all these glob together like this, and you get to the Midwest and everybody's got their individual houses but no fences. And then as the whole thing goes westward, you get to Seattle and Portland, and everybody's got a fence, which is an interesting connection.
Yeah.
Just a visual example of what both of you are talking about in terms of how we're more and more apart from that commonwealth. You're speaking more and more individually based.
I'm seeing lots and lots of
fences in Rochester, Minnesota, and Rochester.
I have a yard that's all chain link fence. It was that way when we bought it, and there's a lot.
There's a jet of broad brush
privacy fences.
Broad brush, yeah.
So I'm wondering, is that to keep you in or others out?
Unclear.
No.
I've got another.
Jack.
When we moved into our house, we'd been there for maybe a year, if that long, and we lowered our fences on both sides.
Great.
to almost waist high. And as a result, we've become very close to both ends. Mm-hmm. It's been really worth doing. I'm glad we did that.
A low fence makes a good neighbor.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Mary Sue.
Completely different angle on it, but I've been sitting here thinking about it, and maybe it relates and maybe it doesn't. But I've got three kids, 11, almost 15, and 17. And at one of their birthdays this last year, it was an absolutely horrible day. Major, important things were happening among the three of them that were not good at all. And one is was walking around the house, jacket overhead, and you know, totally isolating from the others, and major fights about some pretty significant stuff going on in their lives. And all the while I'm trying to make this cake, you know, make a big hoopla out of this birthday. So we sit down to the dinner, because in our house we always make a big deal out of anything that gives us the least provocation for celebration, birthdays among them. And the one whose birthday it was is going, my birthday's ruined. They ruined my birthday. And here's this meal, and it finally turned out we only had like 10 minutes to eat it together, and somebody had to run off, and it was horrible. But I all of a sudden remember looking around at the five of us and going, this is real. This is real life. And nobody particularly made it a wonderful day for the birthday person, but on the other hand, this is a real slice of life. And at that moment, it sort of made us realize that part of community is that it's real. And that it wasn't pulled apart because it was an absolutely horrendous, horrible, very bad day. And there was a sort of peace that came about that 10 minutes together that allowed celebration. Again, it was like almost naming it and saying, but it's a slice of life and we're still together and the five of us have 9 minutes now. I don't know if that fits, but that, it seemed to me that it does. There's an intactness to community that is at the same time vulnerable and
it survives the chaos.
Survives the chaos. Maybe that's it.
And that's a wonderful last word. For the official, it's 9:30, for the official end of the forum, please take a deep breath and continue the conversation. And we thank Janet and Jim and Mary Sue, and thank you all for being here, and keep talking.